Gayla Marty grew up on a family farm near Rush City, Minnesota. She now works in communications at the University of Minnesota. She's active in the Land Stewardship Project's Farm Beginnings program and writes for liturgy and worship. She has a new book out published by the University of Minnesota Press. Patricia Hample calls it Memory of Trees, that her book, The Elegy for the American Family Farm We've Been Waiting For. Gayla Marty joins us now on Real Good Words. Hi, Gayla. Thanks for being here today.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me.
The title of your book is Memory of Trees, A Daughter's Story of a Family Farm. And I loved how you almost surprised the reader right off the bat by using trees as a framework for telling the story of your family and their farm. Because I think most of us tend to think of a farm as not a place of trees.
Right. And it took me a long time to realize that that was the framework for the story. But as I was reading other people's memoirs about farms, I realized that a lot of them were set in that area outside the biome that had been forests. And our farm by the St. Croix River had been created in a clearing that was then further cleared. And so many farms in the eastern part of the United States really were created in that biome that was a part of the eastern forest. And that edge of those forests runs right through Minnesota. And so I wanted to tell the story of the relationship between forests and farming.
Tell us about what your family farm was like when you were growing up.
Yeah, it's really about 3 miles west, 4 miles west of the St. Croix River, at the point where the St. Croix River runs the furthest west. It's about an hour north of the Twin Cities. And there were lots of different landscapes included in that farm. There's wetland, there were open fields, there were pastures that looked kind of like oak savanna. They had oak and elm primarily in those pastures. And then there was woods. There was a hardwood 40-acre section. And then there was a section that had been cleared and then grown back in birch that was next to the railroad tracks. The railroad tracks ran across, and Highway 61 ran on along the eastern edge of our farm. And then around the houses, there was an island of trees and that included some evergreens, pines and some spruce and fir. So that was what it was like, and we grew primarily oats, corn, and hay on our farm for dairy cattle. And during the course of the years that I lived there, the dairy herd grew from 26 cows to about 50 cows that were milked before that herd was eventually sold in 1986 in the federal dairy buyout. So that was what it was like. In 1970, also in addition to that, my farm was farmed in partnership between my dad and my uncle, who'd married sisters from a mile away. And so that sister farm, the Anderson farm, which was in another 200 acres, became part of the Marty farm in 1970. That was a basic description of the farm.
As I read your story, I was so taken by that. You seem to, from a very early age, be so connected to the people that had come before you, your family that was there before you. And it didn't seem like, you know, you were forced to know about these people, but you really went out of your way to find out what your grandparents and great-grandparents were like and what had happened at the farm before you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think partly because I was cared for a lot by my grandmother, who was a recent widow. My grandpa Barney died when I was less than 2 years old. And then my mother, within a couple of months, had twins. And so it was a situation where she would often send me to grandma's house because I was happier. Everybody was happier. My grandma was happy. But my grandma had all the photo albums, and my grandma was also a storyteller. And so because of this alone time we had together, you know, I looked at photo albums. She would tell me stories about the family farm. It was getting to know about their lives from a good storyteller and from a very young age, and then having pictures to go with that. And almost everything that we did on the farm had a story that went with it.
It's hard for me to choose what to ask you about because there's so much to talk about within your story. The title of it, Memory of Trees, A Daughter's Story of a Family Farm. This is kind of a big question, but you write about what it means to be a daughter of a farmer, of a family farmer, and what you were sort of taught that you were going to end up doing in life. And I wonder if you can, because this story starts when you're very young and until you're grown and have your own adult life, can you talk about that role of a daughter of a farmer?
Well, there are many different daughter roles. You know, there are are farms with only daughters, and so the daughters grow up thinking that if this farm's going to continue, of course it's going to be one of them that is responsible or has to take responsibility for that. It was something interesting on our farm was that my dad and my uncle had no sisters, and their mother had always, she'd come from a big family and had always wanted many children, but she had a lot of trouble when she had her second child, my dad, and so she didn't have any more children. But when I was born and I was this daughter, I was special, and so I grew up feeling special and valued because I was a girl. But that was also partly because shortly after, you know, when I was less than 2 years old, my mom had twin boys, and then my aunt across the yard had a son, and then my mother had another son. So there were plenty of sons, and the assumption was that if there were sons, then they would take over the farm. And because there were so many sons, that there was just, it never entered my mind that I would want to be contending to be one of the people who take over the farm, even though I loved it so much. My mom really wanted the best for her kids, and she felt that in the 60s and 70s, better opportunities were available off the farm, and that we didn't have to assume that we'd stay there. But I grew up being part of the labor on the farm. There was a sharp division of labor generally. I mean, there was women's stuff that was done in the house and yard work, but that was considered really essential, and it was really valued by everybody on the farm. But I also did field work, driving the tractor especially, and which I loved to do. So that was my role as a daughter, was to just work hard and contribute to the welfare of the family, but to not have to expect that I would be the one that would take it over.
I know it was hard for you when you had to sell the family farm, and it was something that you may have wanted to do, but circumstances just didn't quite make it possible. What was that like? That farm meant so much to your family and to who you are. What was that like for you? I'm sure it was grief of a sort.
It was grief. It was confusing, too. It felt unexpected in a way that, and yet, you know, when we look back on all the different decisions that had been made and the way the culture had changed, it shouldn't have been that surprising. But part of what was surprising to me was that despite the fact that I'd been living in the city and I had young children, I'd married a guy from the city who valued farm life but didn't have the confidence, didn't think of himself as ever being able to farm. I was confused by why I was so attached. It kind of embarrassed me in a way that I would not be more grown up about it, or everyone around me seemed to be so much more accepting of it and mature about it, and yet that grief was real. And then I discovered that my uncle had really similar emotions about letting go of the land when it was sold. It was 5 years after the dairy herd was sold that a neighbor who was a dairy farmer made an offer on the land in the Marty part of the farm, and it was just heart-wrenching to me. So I had to really, you know, ask the question, why did I care so much, and where did this grief come from, and what were the real reasons that this farm was sold? Because economics, I felt, was too simple of an answer. There were many things that were contributing, that had contributed to the fact that our family would not continue to own that land.
One of the things I like about this, your memoir, is that it isn't, you know, I think we sometimes think we can easily define what it means to have a family farm or why there were all those years of family there on that land, your connection to the land, the animals, but it isn't. You really portray your family, your life, as being more complex, that there were a lot of things going on, because you certainly had the desire to do something different with your life, and you traveled at a young age and studied abroad, and those kinds of things, I think we don't always think that the traditional farmer's daughter would be interested in doing.
Right. You know, the initial study abroad that I took part in high school was in part fueled by my interest in my family's origins. The Marty family had emigrated from Switzerland in the 1880s, and I had been taking French in high school, and this was a gift, really, to our high school that we could have a foreign language teacher at that time. But French, I didn't really think it was practical, and so my practical mind wanted to make it you know, take advantage of the fact that I was having to learn French. So all those things came together. But then I did get this opportunity when I was 16 years old to go to the valley where my great-grandparents had come from and see that and really imagine what they were thinking and some of the reasons that they had immigrated at that time. And we call it heritage study abroad now. I mean, it's recognized as something that a lot of students across as the study abroad in U.S. universities has been on the rise, that there is definitely a segment of students that are motivated and supported by their parents in going back to an ancestral country to understand more about their identity, which certainly happened to me. And then in college, I went a step further and went to another French-speaking country that had been colonized in the 1880s by the French, and that was Tunisia, which had historically been part of the Roman Empire. So I really thought a lot about agricultural history, not just in the United States, but globally.
We're talking with Gayla Marty. Her memoir is called Memory of Trees, A Daughter's Story of a Family Farm. It's published by the University of Minnesota Press. I wonder if we can talk more about your dad and your uncle and their relationship as farmers, as brothers, you know, living next door to each other with their families and everything.
One of the things I discovered while I was writing this book, as I started writing sections of this book, I guess I wrote the first thing that's in this, that I wrote that's ended up in this book is the description of when the cows were sold. But in just considering about of why my uncle and I were so attached to the farm, one of the things I noticed was that both of us had traveled abroad at a fairly young age. He'd been in the service in the 1950s and come home and stayed on the farm and farmed in partnership with his younger brother, my dad. My dad was younger, but he got married first. And the two of them emulated their dad and uncle, who had farmed in partnership since 1912. So Marty brothers were kind of an established concept on the farm, and I think when my brothers, the twins, were born, there was this expectation, at least among some of us, that they would be the next generation of Marty brothers. My dad and my uncle were really different, but they were very close. They worked side by side every day. They had kind of complementary skills. My uncle was really great at field work. My dad was really good with animals. And then they married sisters. My mother was the elder of the two sisters. And my mom and her sister had another older sister, and they had a brother as well. So they weren't the only two children in their family like my dad and my uncle were. But certainly it was a very interesting family to have brothers married to sisters, but it's not that uncommon in farming communities for something like that to happen. I was going to ask you if there were other things about their relationship that you wanted to know about.
Well, it's interesting to me. You also give an honest depiction of their relationship because, like anything, their relationship also wasn't perfect. They didn't always get along.
They had a lot of disagreements, and a lot of those disagreements had to do with parenting and with the farm, you know, what the priority that the farm should have in their lives and in their children's lives. And so, and as children of one of those couples, we were very aware of, like, if we wanted to participate in a school activity, or for my brothers in particular, a school sport, that it wasn't just having to persuade my dad and my mom about that. It would make an impact on my aunt and my uncle as well. And so there was a lot of negotiating that went on, and my dad and my uncle were in disagreement a lot, or ended up, my dad may have agreed with my uncle, but he was married to my mother, and, you know, and similarly for my uncle and my aunt. But because my mom and my aunt were sisters, they could also negotiate things between themselves in a way that maybe if they'd been unrelated would not have happened.
What do you think it brought to your life to not just have your parents and your siblings, but your aunt and uncle and their kids as such an important part of your life?
Well, I've felt that growing up in an extended family like that was really enriching. Also, I had, you know, grew up with grandparents, and once my grandma Marty died, then I had Anderson grandparents that moved over to the farm, and so I always had aunt and uncle and cousins and grandparents on the farm. I would say that one of the things that really gave me was the experience of seeing how people who loved each other could disagree. And I loved all these characters, and I was loved by all of them, but they didn't always agree with each other. And I think when you just grow up with a mom and a dad, sometimes you don't hear their arguments, or you know that they don't agree about something, but you're not really sure what the nuances of those things are. And because my mom and her sister and my dad and his brother were working things out and having to talk about things all the time, it also revealed to us, growing up in this family, a lot of the reasons and the motivations that people have for believing what they believe and acting the way they do and making decisions, taking so many factors into account. And there's just a lot of complexity in life and farming and the culture.
It seems to me writing was always something important to you, especially when you found or you inherited a certain desk in your room to write on.
Yeah.
Tell us about that desk and about writing for you at a young age.
I liked writing from the time I was really little. My mom had a typewriter in the house because she did some work for the school. And so she had a typewriter in the house, and she had been trained as a secretary in high school, and she was a very fast typer. And I was fascinated by that and the fact that the letters weren't in the same order on the typewriter as they were in the alphabet and things like that. I was just interested in reading and writing from a really little age. And so I showed that in the book, you know, who I was as a narrator. But when that desk came to me, my mom had and dad had made, they'd raised the roof on the house, and they'd made rooms upstairs for their growing family because it was a small house. It was just a two-bedroom house, and they had a lot of four kids. And so when that little antique desk came, was passed down from my great uncle Sam, and it fit perfectly in this little space that was in the bedroom that had been made for me upstairs, and it had little cubbies in it and little drawers where I could put everything. And in that little room, I could just shut the door on the noisy family and write stories. And so that's one of the things I did in my spare time. And then after my mother went to work during the day in the summers when I was probably about 10 years old, I would do all my housework and then write a story, work on a story. So I was writing fiction from the time I was little, and then when I got to college, I switched, and I took a journalism major because it seemed more practical.
It seems like the farm girl coming out in you, finding the most practical.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned that about the
very vocational viewpoint about what I did. I had no idea at that time that a job like what I ended up in as a copy editor and a publications editor existed.
Well, like as you described, also studying French, and that once you found a practical use for it, it made sense for you to take it in high school.
Yeah, so it is a real kind of juxtaposition between that romantic part of my and idealistic part of my personality and then the really practical part.
I wonder if you give listeners an idea of your book, and would you read an excerpt for us?
Sure. I'm thinking maybe something about one of the trees, because between each one of the chapters, there's this interlude about a tree, a particular type of tree that was on the farm. And one of the other things that happens during the course of the book is that the voice of the narrator changes from, you know, it grows from mm-hmm. the voice of a child to the voice of an adult. So the early tree interludes are written from the perspective of a child. So I could read the oak tree interlude, maybe?
That'd be great. Was it fun to do that, to kind of recapture the young you in writing in the different voice almost?
Yeah, you know, when I started writing the book, I was in such a state of grief that I was writing about the farm from the point of view of a child, partly because I had young children and I was remembering childhood. And so it seemed really natural to write in that voice. And I didn't realize that it would remain like that, or some of those sections would remain in that voice when it became a book. But that's what happened.
All right. Yeah, that'd be great to hear the section on the oak tree, you said.
Yeah, oak trees. Oak trees fill our farm with friendly fatness in the woods and pastures and around the yard. One stands in the middle of the open space between the barn and the houses, making shade over the gas barrel. Each corn crib has an oak tree for shade. A line of three oak trees marks the center of the lawn between the two houses. The oak tree I know best is my swing tree, shading the pump house and sandbox. The huge trunk has rough gray bark with furrows as deep as my fingers. And the leaves are shaped like mittens with too many thumbs, dark and glossy on top and silvery underneath. They rustle like paper in the wind. I sit for hours on the notched wooden seat of the swing, holding the ropes in my hands facing northeast toward our fields and the woods beyond them. From early spring, when the snow melts enough that I can swing my legs underneath the seat, through summer, when the bare patch under my feet turns to soft dust, through August, when hard but furry acorns fall and force me to wear shoes, to fall, when the rusty gold leaves lay thick on the ground, I swing and tell myself stories, pumping myself higher to see the border of the woods above the growing cornfields. Sometimes I turn and face the other way, toward the road, and 3 miles away, the mill and water tower of the town on the horizon. But the seat feels uneven. Daddy has a Bible with 4 translations side by side. I notice in some versions that oak is the name used for trees called terebinth in other versions. Maybe it's because oak groves in England signify the same thing as groves of terebinths and Bible lands, sacredness. Oak tree with a swing, you stand in the middle of my life. The big house on one side, my house on the other, the barns and sheds and fields and woods ahead of me, the road and town at my back, and your shelter above my head.
That's from Gayla Marty's memoir called A Memory of Trees, A Daughter's Story of a Family Farm. You can find more information at Gayla's website. It's GaylaMarty.com. Gayla, I was going to ask, and this maybe is a question for the people in your life, your family and friends, but do you see things that you grew up doing in your contemporary life? Is the farm girl still in you?
Yeah, I'm really a city woman at this point in my life, I have to say. But I know that I look at the world with eyes that were shaped by the farm. And I do spend time with my mom up on the remaining part of her family's farm. There are no farm buildings left there, but she and my dad built a house later after the action in this story ended. And I love going there, and I love still walking on the roads with my mom and being around that landscape. It's just the most restful thing to my eye. But in our city life, Patrick, my husband, and I bought the house we bought, I'm sure, in great part because of the elm tree that shaded the backyard and the birch tree that was in the front. And that elm tree in particular was really a companion to me during the entire period that the story was taking place. And that tree sheltered the back of the house where our bedroom was, and so I felt like I was in a tree house when I was sitting and writing different parts of this narrative. And then people kept telling us that, you know, this tree would die because of elm disease, and it never died. But I watched it like a hawk and loved that tree so much. And it got its first yellow flags about a month after I finished the manuscript in 2008. And I miss that tree very much. And I'm just grateful that it was my companion for all those years.
Gayla Marty's book, again, called Memory of Trees, A Daughter's Story of a Family Farm. Gayla, it was great talking with you. Thanks so much, and continued success with your book.
Thank you, Heidi. Great to talk to you.